Breathe deep the gathering gloom.
Watch lights fade from every room. Bedsitter people look back and lament. Another day's useless energy spent. Impassioned lovers wrestle as one. Lonely man cries for love and has none. New mother picks up and settles her son. Senior citizens wish they were young. Cold-hearted orb that rules the night removes the colors from our sight. Red is gray and yellow white, but we decide which is right and which is an illusion.
Well, Jonathan Franzen, we got all of our literary pretensions out of the way with the very first thing we played, which was the late, great Mike Pinder. And I want to tell our listeners that Jonathan Franzen did wince the second you heard it. So he did not endorse that particular message.
It was appropriate to play. Mike Pinder's death was reported yesterday.
True.
Yes. I winced because my first musical love was the Moody Blues, and I have been trying to wash the shame of that off me ever since.
Have a care, sir. I am still a dedicated Moody. Don't let me go down the pipeline of Justin Hayward as unappreciated songwriting genius and great vocalist. And Hayward and Lodge are still with us. But all the original members of the Moody Blues, with Mike Pinder's passing, are now gone. So, but I digress. And ladies and gentlemen, there's going to be a lot of digressions here. I'm welcoming Jonathan Franzen on. We'll call it.
It's a fundraiser special.
The fundraiser special. That's a good name for it. I don't think I have to list your appropriate credits, and just go to Google and look them up. But one thing I have to bring up, you've had a lot of literary honors, incredible reputation, and this week, Good Times Local Author of the Year, the best of Santa Cruz. You are the local Good Times' best local author. So I don't know. I don't want this to go too far to your head here, but
need to revise the Wikipedia page immediately.
I think so. You know, Pulitzer, who cares? Potential Nobel, neck. You know, this is the big one. So it's all downhill from here, I have to say.
Joking aside, it means a lot to me.
Well, Santa Cruz means a lot to you, and that's why and I'll go right into it. The format here, if we can call this a format, is Jonathan's given me about an hour and a half of music that means something to you. And we're not going to play all of it, but we're certainly going to play a lot of it, and we're going to talk about the music. And right off the bat, I won't say you jumped at the opportunity to do this, but you mentioned before we started up, you were a disc jockey 45 years ago. Explain that to me.
At the college radio station, yes. I think my last appearance would have been almost exactly 45 years ago today. That is freshman and sophomore year. I did it with my friend Tom, and there were dead air moments. There were drop needle moments. It was the LP era. The radio station looked a lot like K-Squid did until the new floor went in.
And now we've gone way uptown now.
Way uptown, yeah. No, it's actually...
You no longer get hepatitis from walking on the carpet. So
it's clean for the moment.
Yes.
That's what happens when you put down new flooring. It won't be long before it's probably.
Yeah, we'll return it back to its primitive splendor very soon.
Anyway, this was 77, 78, 79, and that was exactly when the new wave was hitting America, and we got to play all the punk and new wave that was coming in, and that was the turning point musically for me in my life, because I'd listened to what I now feel was overproduced music in the 70s on the radio.
With the exception of the Moody Blues, of course. That's not overproduced.
No, that's just production there. And here was this fresh, basic, kind of angry in many cases sound, with a relatively lo-fi production values, and there were amazing bands that came up, Elvis and the Attractions, Talking Heads, The Clash, all of those,
and television,
which we just heard. Those
were no evil.
They were all happening right then, and so they became my music. And I have to say that my tastes were permanently formed or deformed by the experience of that becoming my music.
Are you? I'm trying so hard not to ask stupid questions people would ask, but I'll go for it. When you're writing, judging from your output, you do occasionally. Do you play music? Is that on in the background to kind of power you through it, or
No, it's distracting. I have a problem with music, which is if it's playing, I listen to it. I don't even like it on in restaurants because it's hard for me to concentrate on two things at once. And music is so seductive, it's so compelling that even if it's on relatively low volume, my ears are straining to listen to it, and that's not compatible with focusing on writing. And it's really not compatible with focusing on much of anything else. So, oddly, a lot of my listening is in the car. That's what I do. I don't listen to podcasts. I listen to music in the car.
Well, you I forget the collection, but a line about writing. You said, "When I'm working, I don't want anybody else in the room, including myself." So it strikes me as what you're talking about. Maybe taken one step farther, but
yeah, silence is certainly golden for this writer.
Why don't we play? Yeah, why don't we just stay? You were comfortable. You have the playlist in front of you.
Well, I was thinking maybe we wanted to go into where I was coming from.
Okay.
There was a late edition. There was that Stevie Wonder song, and I have a little story about that. It's meaningful to me.
We do what we professional disc jockeys call front announce, because then people know, oh, okay, what am I listening for?
Well, people mishear lyrics. Mm-hmm. A famous one, I think Laurie Moore mentioned, was hearing The Answer, My Friends. she heard that as "The ants are my friends. They're blowing in the wind."
Which is probably, I think Dylan even would say, is probably an improvement on the original.
In some ways, a lot of Dylan's lyrics.
The later Dylan would certainly have climbed on board that in a second.
And so this Stevie Wonder song, I was always self-improving. I was ambitious. I wanted to be better. I wanted to be a better person, morally, ethically, but I also wanted to be a more productive person. And this song has a moment when apparently the Jackson 5 are doing the vocals, where they're saying "do the wop." And I heard that as a 17, 18-year-old. The song is, "You haven't done nothing." And that was speaking to me. I haven't done anything yet. I'm 18. I haven't accomplished anything. And I heard "do the wop" as "do the work." Do the work. So there you go.
Well, sing along at home, folks. That was the lecture. Now the lab.
Nothing. Yeah, no, 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 no.
author is saying, do the work or I buried Paul. I'm not quite sure.
No, he's saying do the work.
Yeah, definitely totally. Saying do the
totally.
Work.
Totally, and it makes sense. I mean, I think it's, I now read the song as you have not rectified social injustice in this country. You haven't done nothing. But then it's so catchy. It wants to be do the work. And it also, we're not going to play any Jackson 5, but just to go on in the Moody Blues theme.
I got it in your brain. It's like that earwig in Star Trek 2.
Some of the music I liked when I was 13 and 14, like the Jackson 5 and Stevie Wonder, I can still listen to and think is really great. So it's not like I'm rejecting wholesale who I was. I'm just... I'm speaking to a Moody Blues fan, so I should probably move on to a different topic.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You know, I mean, I've logged and noted your poor taste on that. We don't have to dwell on it any further. But, the thing about music, too, for me is each song is like a portable time machine. You hear the song, and the best of them take you back to either where you heard it or the frame of mind when you heard it. And then some... apply new meaning when you hear it. You know, it's real interesting the power of the potency of a 3-minute song.
Yeah. And I have to say, Stevie Wonder was kind of a fixture. My arty high school friends all love Stevie Wonder. And then my even artier college friends, really kind of hardcore stuff we were listening to. But then we put on the Stevie Wonder because I feel in some way he's underrated as just a great person and great musician.
Yeah, there's certain artists like that. I remember seeing Hamilton after all the ballyhoo,
yeah.
And I came out saying, you know, that thing's underrated.
Yeah, no.
It's really better.
It's really good. It's
yeah,
really good.
You know, and there's certain artists that are at that level and Stevie Wonder, you're right. He's just so good, and he's so consistently good. There's not a lot of... Ebony and Ivory, we'll give them that mulligan, but other than that.
Exactly. Continuing on the
70s.
The 70s theme. So my next enthusiasm after the Moody Blues was the Grateful Dead. My brother had tired of the Grateful Dead, and he'd bequeathed me like 9 records.
Ooh.
Yeah. Again,
did this coincide with recreational marijuana by any?
No, not at all. Not at all. That was the weird thing. I just would kneel in front of my parents' console stereo and listen to the songs, and with a particular affection for Working Man's Dead, American Beauty, and then Bob Weir's record, Ace, which is just like a knockout great record.
We played, I had to show Grateful Dead Zone with Henry Kaiser, and we picked as one of the sublime pieces of playing as the playing in the band on that. Just gorgeous, gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. And on my Sirius XM subscription with my car, I can listen to Grateful Dead 24 hours a day if I wanted to. But it's a little too much of a good thing. And a song they almost never play is the one on this list, which I think holds up very, very well. It's written and sung by, I don't know.
Robert Hunter wrote it, actually.
Robert Hunter wrote it, but it's sung by Pigpen.
Or, as I say every week on the Grateful Dead Zone, the mighty main man with a master plan, the man who puts the word show in male chauvinism, the one, the only, Ron McKernan.
I've been balling a shiny black steel jackhammer, been chipping up rocks for the great highway. I live 5 years if I take my time, balling that jack and drinking my wine. I've been chipping them rocks from dawn till doom, while my rider hide my bottle in the other room. Doctor say better stop balling that jack, if I live 5 years I'm gonna bust my back. Yes I will. Easy win, cross the there's a whole lot of women, mama, out in red on the streets today. And the river keeps a talking, but you never hear a word it say.
The Mighty Main Man himself, Ron McKernan. And I did not know you were a serious Deadhead and a Pigpen fan. That's an acquired taste for, you know, some strata of Deadhead.
Deadhead is a strong term. I saw them live twice.
Well, that's it. You know, you're one of us now. You can't escape.
I was stone cold sober both times.
So okay, well, you're not one of us then.
Yeah,
sorry,
exactly.
I retract that statement there. Well, we have some bong water for you to drink in the second half of this hour. So.
Yeah,
and I'd be remiss if I didn't say something. This is KSQD. I'm sitting here with Jonathan Franzen. Yes, the Jonathan Franzen. And we're not going to talk about his incredible body of work, though I'm going to probably try to steer the conversation there. We're playing music. Music, I won't say that made you, but songs that speak to you. And if you like what you're hearing, I'd also be very remiss if I didn't say we're doing a pledge drive now. We're in the waning moments of said pledge drive. And if you want to express your appreciation for what we're doing at this moment and in general, call 831-900-5773, 831-900-5773. And if you have a message or a comment for Jonathan, assuming it's a safer air and friendly, leave a message and I will pass it on. Or if you have a question, I might even do that, again, assuming if it's safer air and or friendly. But let us go on.
Let us go on. Before we move on chronologically, a little bit beyond the 70s, let's step back to the 60s, because I it's weird. I was – what could have been my formative years in music were precisely the L.A. studio years. So I missed the late 60s, early 70s music. I was getting that kind of secondhand. And there was this kind of just dead spot of stuff that would be on the radio, particularly
Wrecking Crew's Greatest Hits, is that we're talking about? We did a 3-hour show with about Jim Gordon, the drummer who basically played on all of those records a couple weeks back. So I think I know what you're zeroing in on. So you want time for some Seals and Crofts, I think. We're going to hit
exactly.
you with that.
Exactly. Very, very, it was... And the songs were long, I feel like generationally I kind of came at a lull in the progress of rock and roll music. But before we move on, I think let's just dip back into how great the 60s were. And I'm thinking of Heatwave. Right.
Heat Wave, definitely. Yes. Martha Reeves.
Right. So along with ABC and Back in the USA, one of my three favorite dance songs.
This would be, speaking of musicians, this is basically one of James Jamerson, the great bass player, and Richard Pistol Smith, the drummer, who basically played on all of those records, greatest hits. 1963.
Imagine. And it sounds as fresh today as it did 61 years ago.
Whenever I'm
2 minutes and 49 seconds of sheer perfection.
Really, truly perfect, including the lyrics. So that's another handicap I have when it comes to pop music, is if the lyrics aren't at least okay, I can't listen. And that, in fact, back to the Moody Blues.
That there's a cancellation, because yeah, if you go for literary and you fail, which I would have tend to agree, the Moody Blues occasionally did, seldom or often did, but
when you're 15 years old and you have a song called "Isn't Life Strange," it's like, of course you're 15. It's just occurred to you that, wow, life is strange, but by the time you're 16, you're having some trouble with those lyrics. And the last thing I'll say about Heatwave is they're kind of great lyrics too. I mean, that is the experience of being suddenly madly in love. It is, you're hot all over. It's like, and so I come back to the songs that are working at the intersection of decent to excellent lyric and music and melody, actually. I'm also kind of a melody fan, I confess.
Well, that's in the Lamont Dozier Holland. And Bob Dylan, who's come up, said about Smokey Robinson, and everyone thought he was being facetious, "Oh, he's America's greatest living poet." And people thought, "Oh, that's so funny, Bob." Well, okay, you know, and so we can take that on and roll that around a little bit. But but interesting though, the simplicity, the appropriateness of the lyrics to the music too. It's not like this is when you have a Dylan who has these, you know, incredible lyrics wedded to a certain background, it works. And then if this had been written any smarter, it wouldn't be nearly as good. It would have been self-conscious.
That's right. And maybe while we're bouncing around in the 60s, because the 60s really were great, the long 60s.
But you were like, you got it by osmosis and older siblings, right?
Yeah. I mean, the first song I remember having in my head, really stuck in my head, was Judy Collins' version of "Both Sides Now." I was just in love with that song. And then the Beatles, you know, their hits were coming when I was in grade school, and I couldn't make out the lyrics. And, you know, for example, "Tit Bubby Lone." Tit Bubby Lone. Tit Bubby Lone.
I hate to break it to you. You have that wrong.
I know. So I was hearing that, and the first deep crush I had on the song, was, "Save the Country," the Fifth Dimensions, which a version of a Laura Nyro song,
of course.
Theirs, I think, is actually kind of better.
We trotted that out election night 2020. We did a musical counterpoint to election night that was definitely on deck and played.
I spent a month in the summer of maybe after fifth grade or something, listening constantly to KXOK, hoping to hear that song again. I would just turn it on low volume, hoping to hear that song. Because that was, at the time, for me, I mean, I didn't buy records. We barely had a record player. That was the only way to hear a song again that was stuck in your head.
And your parents, judging, you know, you've written pretty extensively about them. My instincts is their album collection wasn't too long on music.
Ray Conniff. Herb Alpert, I think, might have been the edgiest.
Well, TJB, you can't, you know, yeah. We're big fans of the TJB here on KSQD. So no knock on the great Herb Alpert. But yeah, it's...
That was their up-tempo choice. But yeah, it was my mother's favorite artist was Perry Como.
Again,
you know. No, exactly. But they abhorred. So anything pop or rock and roll that is modern pop, 60s, 70s pop, had to be concealed from them.
Which, of course, made it all the more fun to listen to.
Of course. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
It approved it. It would have been. Yeah, my parents were kind of hep parents, and my mother had a few records, but good ones. Dusty in Memphis, I remember that one. Nashville Skyline, mm-hmm. she got that. New Morning, she got. Sgt. Pepper's. So, which is probably why I steered clear of the Beatles for about 40 years. And, you know, it's forever tarnished it. But again, who could say you dislike the Beatles?
But while we're bouncing around in that decade, let's throw in the Byrds tune as well.
All right. And this would be the Byrds, definite. David Crosby is still in the band. He had not been kicked out yet for, well, being David Crosby.
Yeah.
And this is from the album Fifth Dimension. You're listening to KSQD. I'm sitting here with Jonathan Franzen, who is disc jockeying, is spinning these fab waxings with me today.
Then, sir, was her reply. Oh, no, kind sir, I cannot marry thee. For I've a love who sails the deep salt sea. Though he's been gone these 7 years, still no shall marry me. What if he's died all in some battle slain? Or if he's drowned in the deep salt sea? What if he's found some other love? And his new love both married me. If he's found some other love, he and his new love both married me. I wish them health and happiness. Living out all across the sea. He picked her up all in his arms, and kisses gave her 1, 2, and 3. Soon he'd no more my own true love. I am your love, John Riley. Saying weep no more, my own true love. For I'm your love, lost John Riley.
David Crosby, very prominent there with the Byrds. John Riley from Fifth Dimension. Interesting choice, because that wasn't kind of the hit on that record, certainly.
Well, I'm a big 8 Miles High fan.
Yeah, exactly.
But that song, I didn't know, because I didn't have these records. My former DJing buddy from college, Tom, was making me mix CDs, and he put this song on it, and I was driving up to Cape Cod, actually, and listening on the rental car stereo, and played this song, and I just started crying very hard. And then probably the next 10 times I heard it, I would choke up, because it's so... I'm getting a little...
Yeah, I can see her.
Getting a little misty-eyed, yeah, just thinking...
Your glasses are fogging up as we speak.
You know, it's one of my... there are various narrative tropes, and the trope of the person who stays true to another person, even though so much time has passed that you don't even recognize the person you're staying true to, and the joy of... they're reuniting. They had something, and she thought he was dead, and here he is. It's just like that's a category of story that really, really gets me. And also stories of fathers and sons tend to get me as well.
Well, you've got a tough job description because the birds or musicians, a lot of the musicians we're playing can conjure up through music, even if the lyrics are bad, there's a whole experience. When you're writing fiction, not nonfiction, which, you know, your nonfiction is absolutely fantastic, but your fiction, you're conjuring up entire worlds. And it must kind of annoy you sometimes that you can hear a bird song that automatically will take you to that place. And as a prose writer, it's so, you know, to have to hit that mark or hit that target.
Well, just to go on, I mean, self-indulgently, please. I'm going to talk about my own history as a novelist.
Absolutely.
I was driving up to Cape Cod to crack a really difficult problem in my novel Freedom. And I don't want to give too much away, but it is about instead of 7 years that the central couple has been apart, it is 6 years. And I think hearing that song fed into the decision I made to end that novel in a certain way. I wanted to try to produce, without the aid of music, just with words, I wanted to produce the same feeling that song had given me.
I'm shocked at my meandering, you know, that, yeah, I mean, I... And you did it, you know, and that's the thing. And it's preserved. And the great thing about a novel is it's there. It's in the culture, you know, just like a lot of these records, there's bum notes that the musicians wish they could clean up. But then it's the bum notes that give it its power, too. And one person's bum notes or another person's. Oh, that's the – I'm sure you find that a lot where stuff that you think are – that people regard have come up, and the things that matter to them are things that didn't necessarily intersect with you. And you're like, really, you like that?
Yeah, I know.
I don't need examples. But.
No, many sprang to mind. And just kind of loosely, since we're talking about that time in Cape Cod, I was also listening, not from the same CD from my friend Tom. I was listening to how do you say his last name? Israel Kamaka.
Izzy, we call him.
Izzy, okay, thank you. Izzy's version of the song that we had played, had sung at my mother's memorial service after she died in 1999. And part of what you're doing when you're deep in a novel is you are going back and re-experiencing in a different way strong feelings you've had in the past. And there was a very active reassessment of my mother going on right then through this book I was writing. And again, another song that made me cry up there in Cape Cod.
You can handle this. Okay. I just don't, we're going for this, and that means we're going to have to get out of
it
this.
It may not mean as much to anyone
me. This is an incredible, it means we're going to have to bring out Sleater Kinney and the Mekons here to
freshen things up.
But okay. Without further ado.
Okay. This one's for Gabby. Thank you. up, that's where you find me. Oh, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly, and the dream that you did to, oh why can't I? Well, I see trees of green and red roses too. I'll watch them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Well, I see skies of blue and I see clouds of white and the brightness of day. I like the dark and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people passing by. I see friends shaking and singing, how do you do? They really say, I love you. I hear babies cry and I watch them grow. They learn much more than we'll know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Someday I wish upon a star, wake up where the clouds are far behind. Be where trouble melts like a lemon drops, high above the chimney top, that's where you find me.
Support for KSQD comes from the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. The Wood Stove Changeout Program now offers higher incentives for Santa Cruz, Monterey, and San Benito County residents to switch to cleaner home heating alternatives. Details at MontereyBayCleanAir.org. That's MontereyBayCleanAir.org. Thank you, MBARD, for supporting Community Radio K-Squid.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow, What a Wonderful World. They pretty much had to retire both of those songs after that exquisite, exquisite, exquisite version. You're listening to, I'm not quite sure what it is, maybe we call it Play It Cool with Jonathan Franzen, or we're playing cool stuff and talking about it. That's an operative title here. Underscore, I mean, we're doing that. We'll have to come up with something. By the end of the show, I will press you, since you've been known to come up with titles of your works.
Well, when I was DJ in college, my friend Tom and I tussled about what we would call our show. I wanted Moods for Moderns, which was Elvis Costello song. He wanted Jesus of Cool, which was Nick Lowe.
Of course.
And somehow both of which were fine.
Fine titles.
Somehow we ended up with A Clatter of Platters as
really?
The name of our show.
Clatter of Platters.
Yeah. Dismal.
That would, yeah. And That was your final choice.
We still clutch our brows. How could we have settled on that?
Is it a coincidence you haven't been – this? It's been 45 years since you last did this. I just throw this out here as an observation.
It was stressful, especially back in the days with the turntables.
Yes. I'm going off the handy-dandy MacBook Air off an Apple playlist here, which, by the way, never underestimate this fine, fine radio station, KSQD, the occasional glitch happens, which I want to remind everybody. You're listening to KSQD. I'm sitting here with Jonathan Franzen, a local legend, winner of coveted Best Local Author from Good Times this week. So I think, as I said earlier, put away the Nobel, forget that Pulitzer. You have arrived, my friend. And it is the waning hours of our pledge drive, and 831-900-5773. If you like the radio that we're doing right now, radio, frankly, that I can't imagine hearing anywhere at the moment. This isn't a podcast. It's a format that could only exist on live radio because you're not able to talk and play music on podcasts. You know, it's believe it or not, and the world does not need any more podcasts, by the way, in my ever humble opinion.
And a couple of pledges have come in while we've been speaking.
Thank you to pledgers. A gentleman by the name of Anonymous and a gentleman by the name of Manuel. And I know who Manuel is, and thank you, Manuel. And one listener called in with a request, Jonathan, for Inagata De Vida. And I think they mean the 18-minute version, which I sadly will not be able to play. But that leads me through a miracle of clumsy segueing to the movie Red Dragon, which used Inagata De Vida, based on the Thomas Harris novel. And we were just talking while Izzy was singing about genre novels. And I mentioned how, having read Crossroads 2 weeks ago, it pretty much wrecked me from my favorite genre novelists. I read a bad book and stopped. I never give up a book, but after, I won't mention the book, but halfway through it, after reading Crossroads, it was so terribly written and so unevocative and so everything that your work isn't, that I literally abandoned ship. I don't care what happens with The Frozen Mammoth. Oops, I'm giving away the title there.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. But
Okay, I'm going to tie into something I was speaking about earlier, Inagata De Vida. That's basically 8-year-old me hearing Tit Bubby Lone, because you know the story of that title, right?
No.
So they laid down the track, and then they just like went off on motorcycles or went to Mexico or something. They left the tape to their... I think it was manager, maybe it was the producer, the studio producer, and they were hot and they wanted to get the record out quickly and they couldn't reach the band. So they just took a guess about what that song was called. He's singing in the Garden of Eden. But what the producer heard was Inagata De Vida.
Gabba Gabba Hey, too, with the Ramones. I did not know that.
In a Garden of Eden, baby.
Yeah. I much prefer Inagata De Vida.
Yeah, it is better, right?
It is definitely good. But the reason we bring up Thomas Harris was you mentioned if there's such a thing as high literature or actual card-carrying literature, you are a serious practitioner of same. What genre novelist, which is I'm an anti-egghead and I read, good genre books, but I'm kind of curious if you ever dabble in, you know, the more mainstream and some books that you read that you like that get the job done.
I like a good spy novel. Someone like Le Carré, somewhat problematic figure in real life, but...
An author who's a problematic figure in real life?
Well, I think maybe a little especially problematic in Le Carré's case. But, is Little Drummer Girl literature? Is it a genre novel? It's a spy novel. It's totally a spy novel. And yet he was such a good writer. that he blurs the line. So I do have a an other spy novels, mysteries, sci-fi, not since really high school.
You mentioned Silence of the Lambs. It's a, we got on the sure. Thomas Harris kick.
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while there's a book that that everybody's reading, and you pick it up and you read three pages and, oh, there are no cliches here. Well, that's kind of my definition of literature. Somebody who can write a page without a cliche of any kind. But I have to say that much of my genre consumption is TV.
Really? So TV, what's on your your Netflix queue list, or what are you watching?
Oh,
you
let's see.
Stuff?
I just blew through Tokyo Vice. Super pulpy. Not anything. It's no Breaking Bad. It's no Silicon Valley. I mean, to name some favorites, Nurse Jackie, or those are some real favorites.
Oh,
but
yeah.
And I actually watched the first season of Three Body Problem.
How is that? It sounds a little too, dare I say it, egghead and postmodernist for me. It just seemed a little.
It's attractive young people with relationship and health problems an alien invasion. So it's, you know, but it's so kind of deliciously expensively produced. It was fun.
Just finished Shogun, the 10 hours of Shogun.
That's on the tentative list.
I'm a big Clavel fan of the King Rat, Shogun, and Taipan, which I think is the best of the litter. But then he kind of got a little down, you know, a little lost in the series mode. But the definitely.
But there are so many books I need to read, so many friends' books, so many books that people are talking about in a literary way that I tend mainly on long plane trips to go to the reliable genre novel. So TV, long-form TV, has honorary novel status.
Well,
as
Breaking
far as I'm
Bad
concerned.
Certainly, The Wire, you know, the
absolutely
Deadwood.
Deadwood, I did like the Dexter novel better, much better, actually. But there's a Western that Pete Dexter was an underrated writer, man. And what was good about Deadwood the show was from Dexter,
right.
And what was over the top and annoying
was David Milch.
Yes.
Hmm. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQT Prunedale. I'm sitting here with Jonathan Franzen, guest DJ. What are we calling this now?
A clatter of platters.
Clatters of platters. I guess that's what we're going with right now. And
we're at the top of the hour, and I'm signed on for 2 hours. If anyone is still listening,
I thank you
from the bottom of my heart. But now it's time for the turn.
Yeah,
turn.
We have to go somewhere after that last song. So let's pep things up here. So what do you got for us?
Let's go to the Au Pairs.
Okay, let me just find those a little.
So this is what blew into my life after the mellowness of the 70s.
And this is the New York years now? Is this?
No. This was still college. And
so where were you going to college?
I went to Swarthmore College in
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania,
so near the main line. Which
no, not and crucially not. It was the media line, not the main line.
What was the club though? The music club down there.
Let's see. Oh, there was the Trocadero. The venues where we saw some of these bands.
Tower Theater.
Yeah, we did actually see shows at the Tower. And I don't even remember now. I think they're long gone, the places that the hot bands were playing.
Well, what did they say? If you remember the 80s, you weren't really there.
If you don't buy it, you'll get lonely. If you defy it, you're doomed to cry. It's a big can, but hard to evade. And you only find out when you ask why.
serious pogoing going on there. I just did some stage diving. I hope you didn't mind. I think the station's still working after that. The Au Pairs, a genre of music you don't hear a lot on this fine, fine radio station, KSQD, and that isn't because it's not great music. So I'm glad to...
Well, it's Friday night. We need some up-tempo stuff.
Hopefully no one's going to call to withdraw their pledge. But,
and, now we're moving into genres and modes that... It felt like a breakthrough when this music started happening.
Well, when you look at what it's rebelling against, and you know, when you think about the '60s,
Foreigner,
and, you know, that the quality of songs, the melodies, and everything else, it was almost to me like there was a finite amount of them, and it's like a pond that got fished out. You know, that's like how many, as Arlo Guthrie said about Bob Dylan, you know. Or songwriting, you cast a line and you hope you can catch something. And he said, yeah, but I don't think people fishing downstream from Bob Dylan ever caught very much.
Yeah.
But I think there's something in that analogy where, like, the good melodies and a certain kind of music, it was taken, and then it got bombasticized in the 70s and incredibly self-conscious. And then, though I admit I'm a closet Emerson, Lake and Palmer fan, I'm unashamed. But speaking of bombastic, and then this stuff comes in, which is just, you know, a musical enema just sort of changes everything.
And I do like a loud electric guitar. It just cleans my head out. You can't hide from it kind of electric guitar. But, you know, Monogamy, it's such a great song. And also a sense of humor came along. I mean, people had been doing it throughout, but a lot of that bombast and that studio sound in the 70s, you know, there was Warren Zevon and there was Randy Newman. There were people who were funny, but by and large, it wasn't very funny. And what swept in starting around 77, 78, I mean, even the Ramones are basically a comedy act.
When you think of the twin seismic events back to back, Patti Smith with Horses,
right,
and the Ramones. I still remember being up on campus, UCSC, with Rick Walker when he got the first Ramones record, and we were just marveling. There were like 20 songs on a record that was 35 minutes long. Just that concept blew our minds. And then playing it, and we're just like, what is this? This is just like being beamed in from another planet. And I had the same impact with Patti Smith. This is just like nothing I've ever heard before.
Yeah.
And then that kicked the door in, and the rest followed.
And there was stuff happening that I didn't actually find out about until somewhat later, because I was working hard in my 20s, which would have been the 1980s, and not going to any shows, and really didn't have much in the way of friends. I was married. So I just kind of checked out of the 80s.
But you're working, too. I mean, if your writing is that monastic, as it sounds like, where you really have to dial in and you're dealing in New York.
Yeah.
When you get out after being hermetically sealed, music must have been a...
And when, you know, we would write for 8 hours a day, and then we would have dinner, and then we would read for 5 hours. And I did that. I did that 5 days a week. Then I had a half-time job that I was able to do on the weekends. And you know, if you are either writing or reading for 13 hours a day, there's just not any room for music, even if I'd had the contacts. And also, some of the stuff that came after the new wave mostly wasn't to my taste, and it was only later that I realized, oh, there were interesting things happening. There were actually things happening even a little earlier, like the Saints in Australia. And then there was this other band, the Go-Betweens, who were doing really flaky, marginal stuff that was also kind of wonderful. And only when I came out of the tunnel at the end of the 80s did I start to learn what had been happening. So let's hit a couple of those songs.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Go-Betweens. You're listening to Platter. Clatter of Platters with guest DJ Jonathan Franzen on KSQD. And yes, it is our pledge drive, ladies and germs, 831-900-5773. If you appreciate hanging out with a local hero like Jonathan Franzen and hearing some great music, this is the place to be. But the station runs on your donations. So, and we see those lights and those phones light up here. So please speed dial 831-900-5773. We're near the end of this epic pledge drive, but we need your donation contribution support to keep all this stuff going. Garage music. You got that Farfisa organ going there. You can do no wrong with that particular sound.
Well, if you look at the century long history of blues and rock, it started as a thing that people just like picked up a guitar and played the blues, and even in the 50s and 60s, it was pretty basic stuff. I mean, Buddy Holly, E-A-E-A-D-A-E. I mean, it's really stuff you – a little tricky rhythm, but it was really basic. And then it became this professional thing. And that was what I like about the song we just played is like –
Sounds like there's three mics in the studio.
I could learn to play that keyboard part, and I don't play keyboards. I could learn, like, in a week, I could play that song.
How did you miss out being in the Rock Bottom Remainders, by the way? I would think that you're calling. Come on, you had all the, you know, you and Amy Tan, Stephen King, all the, you'd been a...
It was a little before my time.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. It's 80s.
Yeah, that's a slightly older
Well,
set.
When they do the new Rock Bottom Remainders.
Yeah.
When you were in the 80s, right? Though you were published pretty quick, but I'm curious about that process because I imagine the publication of the first novel is this incredible religious experience. That's it. You've been to the mountaintop, but it took a lot more writing for the quote breakthrough. Or did you see it that way, or did you Did you get enough nourishment from, you know, kind of the early writing and its reception?
I did very well with that first novel. It was my publisher's lead title. The fall it came out,
and they gave it the love it deserved.
They did. They got Fred Marcellino to design the cover. He was kind of the it jacket designer at that time, and people didn't really do readings yet. That became a huge thing in the 90s. So there wasn't much of a tour, but they advertised. It got a huge amount of review attention. So I felt I'd done remarkably well enough for my parents to notice, oh, he can do this.
Which was, of course, the entire point of doing the book and getting it published was...
To show that I could be a writer.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, there were some foreign editions of the book. And it was plenty. It was a lot. But then, yeah, then came some harder years. My life sort of fell apart in certain ways, and my second novel came and went without much notice. So
it's like the second album. You know, the analogies in music. You know, the right album art, the right support from the record label. You know, the right timing, and then you know the second album syndrome. You know, it's a tough. There are some analogies here.
Well, yeah. I mean, second albums like This Year Is Model or More Songs About Buildings.
Okay, there are exceptions.
Yeah.
Free Will and Bob Dylan. Okay,
yeah,
I got that.
There are some exceptions. Anyway, yes. Yeah, so I gave up my half-time job when my first novel was published, and except for some teaching gigs, I've lived as a writer ever since. So that's
worked an honest day since then.
I have had a terrible employer and a terrible employee ever since. That is self-employment as a writer. We should, while we're hearing things from the 80s that I was unaware of at the time. So I was living in Boston for much of the 80s. And while I was there, this amazing band was playing. This was before they retired because they'd ruined their ears because they were famous for just unbearably loud shows. This is actually a relatively listenable Mission of Burma song that we have queued up here.
Relatively listenable. That's a high praise indeed.
I thought of the shorter song, That's How I Escaped My Certain Fate, which is brilliant. They were brilliant. This was happening right under my nose. I had no idea. It wasn't until the 90s that I went back and realized.
Lord,
what,
I know. Now, all I had to do, I was in Boston in about 73, 74, walking past the club where Bruce Springsteen was playing it resonated with me. But I know exactly the dates. I know exactly the marquee in Cambridge. And let's just say, rarely does a night go by. what was I thinking? So Mission of Burma. Were they a Boston band?
They were a Boston band, yes.
Just like the Standells here, speaking of a great this is not Dirty
and
Water.
Jonathan Richmond.
Yeah, Jonathan Richmond, the Government Center. All right, we digress.
I admit that I chose some of these songs thinking you don't hear this so often on K-Squid.
Well, I would say not so often. I think the word never comes to mind, which is great. Yeah, that's the great thing about this fine community radio station. We contain multitudes. It is a pledge drive, 831-900-5773. And that may be the first time I didn't have to look and crane my neck over. I should be able to, you know, I know like David Crosby's harmonies on John Riley, but our radio station phone number escapes me, 831-900-5773. Please call. So I am curious, though, because, you know, Boston, New York, urban areas, Mission of Burma, and then you've been here. How long have you been in Santa Cruz? Like,
I first came out here to see Kathy Chetkovich, who I'd met at an artist colony, in October 1998. So I have been coming here for 26 years, and it took us a couple of years to sort things out because I was a dedicated New Yorker by that point. But we decided we wanted to live together always at the same time, same place, around 2001. So we started coming out here for about 4 months a year while keeping the New York apartment. And at that time, it wasn't Santa Cruz. It was Boulder Creek. A whole different place.
I was about to say, yeah.
Although, of course, we were in the city often. And we kept up that seasonal thing. It was great to be here in the summer because the summer was gray and cool. I love it. And it was good to be here for maybe 6 weeks in the winter because it would always storm. Rain. And I love it. And we miss.
Don't forget those great power outages, too.
Yeah, in Boulder Creek, for sure. Yeah. No, the wood stove, the unreplaced wood stove in Kathy's cabin got a lot of use when the power went out, which it did often. So it's really only about the last 8 years we've been here full time.
Yeah, but it's interesting. You reference Santa Cruz, but you don't write about it. You know, and that's why I'm asking questions because I'm curious. You know, I have. If there's something nonfiction that you have, I'm just curious. The nonfiction article about Santa Cruz that has the evocative conjuring up that you've done for so many other places you've lived in, Santa Cruz. Like, how do you? What do you love? What speaks to you in this town?
Well, my novel Purity is substantially set in Felton.
Okay.
And so it's not quite true that I don't write about it.
And I'm speaking of nonfiction, but
in nonfiction,
yeah,
yeah, it's what I love about it is it feels like home. I'm going to be going, as I do every year, down to the desert on Monday. I like to go to the spots in the desert where the migratory birds congregate because there's water.
And, you know, we made it an hour and 25 minutes about birds. I just want to point that out. That is a record in a Jonathan Franzen interview, I think. I just want to point that out. Woohoo!
And I know, right? And this might be the first and last mention of birds. But
we did play the birds, but that's different.
And they were called BYRDS because there was already a band named the BIRDS.
Yes. So speaking of rock and roll trivia, you're keeping me alert here.
I do not have even brochure knowledge compared to your encyclopedic knowledge.
Please.
But anyway, you drive back through this incredibly hot, often very arid. Like if you come up through Coalinga or someplace, it's just really, really, it's intense. And then you come over the last hill, whether you're coming on 152.
Yeah, that 152 down.
And suddenly it's green.
It's magic land. It's
like, and it looked like it was a completely blistering, cloudless day. And you drive a little further, and it's foggy. In fact, the streets are sort of wet. So
the physical plant.
The physical plant. I love the I like that it's close to the city, the big city,
but far enough away.
Yeah, I mean, I like it for the reason everyone else likes it, which is why it has some of the most expensive housing in the Western Hemisphere.
Woohoo! Number one, yay!
Yeah, right. So that's not good. Although it does say to me that the demand for housing here is infinite.
In the Carroll plant, there's a quality in this fine, fine radio station, KSQD. I refer to it because we internet stream. It's Santa Cruz without borders. There's a certain thing that this town has that I, without completely sincerely, when someone who works in Hollywood says completely sincerely, you know what to do, Jonathan. But sincerely, this particular radio station with all its diverse programming captures so much of Santa Cruz. And I always joke with a beloved program director, if KSQD was any better, we wouldn't be as good, you know?
There is something really sweetly funky about K-Squid, I have to say. You walk in here and it feels you're not in Pasadena. You are not in, La Jolla, you're in Santa Cruz. It's down market in a good way, but of course there are these contradictions because you have the incredible cost of living here, whether you're buying or renting. And so I'm a little, and frankly, it does not have the ethnic or income diversity one might like. It's one of the reasons it was hard to let go of New York is you get on the subway and you are surrounded by people who don't look like you and don't have lives like yours, and that you're in this kind of intimate space with them. Here, I live on the West Side. It's pretty white and it's pretty well off. I mean, there are a lot of students, so it's not problem free. And I don't romanticize the place.
That's except why, for the Giant Dipper. Hundred year anniversary of the Giant Dipper. So
it has an exceptionally good bookstore.
And it had with Logos an extra
and yes, Logos was great.
That block, you know, I took a colleague of yours, Alec Wilkinson from the New Yorker, to Logos back when it was up and running, and I said, look at this block. We're at a world-class used bookstore. Look across the street, the Del Mar Theater, a world-class original theater. You've got Pizza My Heart over to the right of the Del Mar. You've got, you know, and I sort of pointed out, like, this is like the best block. Come on down New York, you know, because all of this is on this one block. And when they knocked Logos out, and sorry to go on my rant, it was just such an important thing, and the fact that it's still empty, you know, it's still vacant.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
With the Logos.
No,
sign. It just breaks my heart.
Logos was good,
and Bookshop Santa Cruz, wonderful, God knows. But just
and
the
by
combination.
The way, they will order anything for you and get it to you almost as fast as Amazon does. So
which I do, folks. Local, support your local merchants. If I buy a book, I'm going to buy it at Bookshop Santa Cruz. I'm happy to pay $1 more or $2 more if that's what it costs to support a local merchant. So I'm with you totally on that.
But it's really, I mean, I started with the weather and the landscape because that is important to me. And really the other thing is the people who are here. And I mean the people I know. And they are not at all like the Californians I imagined when I was living in the East. They are smart and they are funny and they are they're just really great.
Oh, that's...
So.
Well, thank you, because, you know, I know you've been here. I know you have boots on the ground here. But I was just wondering, you know, what do you make of this? Because I look at it askance sometimes. You know, there's certain times when you're thinking, you know, does this have to be this hard, or can't they figure out this or X or Y? And then you just come back to the things that are just here, the hologram of coolness that hangs over this town.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm a enemy of the concept of coolness.
Oh, come on. Some of these music choices, Jonathan, give me have a care.
Oh, let's go anti-cool here then. No, let's...
You're the guy who came out with Clatter of Platters, so I don't think you have... well, okay, you're right. You just proved your point. Enemy of cool. Better than Jesus of Cool. Enemy of Cool.
Enemy of Cool, yeah. Why don't we go to some more noise? Let's do the fuzzy My Bloody Valentine.
Okay, yeah. We still have a few listeners, so let's see if we can drive them out and drive them the movie Sullivan's Travels, nothing like a deep dish movie to drive people out into the open. There's nothing like My Bloody Valentine to get people waking up. Bloody Valentine. So give me a little that has appeared on your playlist for what miraculous reason?
They were a very noisy band. They were very influential, and I think they would have probably been even more so and maybe more popular, except they took forever to put records out. They were just really slow. They were British. I think some instantiation of them is still around. I came to them by way of a recent graduate when I went back to my old school. We did leave Steely Dan off, by the way. I like Steely Dan too, but
you just like the William Burroughs reference. Come on, you can't fool me.
I know. I talk about like all time great songs. My old school is really one of the all time great songs. But anyway, when I went back there, I got to be friends with some people in their early 20s, and one of them had very hip, cool music taste, and she was the one who turned me on to the Go-Betweens and to My Bloody Valentine. and various other things that were happening that I would have had no idea of.
And that's so much the power, too. You know, the you mentioned growing up with listening to the radio, the power of the record store and the guy from High Fidelity, the snobby guy behind the counter where you'd walk up and you'd say, "What is that?" And they'd look you up and down, and then they would say, "Here, kid, listen to this or buy that." That happened to me many a time. Or friends where you're like, "What is this?"
Or even John Perella's in the New York Times, as happened. So when I separated in a serious way from my then wife, I was looking to, like, get a breath of fresh air, and in a, sort of an old man way, I was probably, what, 35 or something.
Like ancient.
I happened to read, I think it was Perellis in the New York Times, saying, here's some really good recent records that you might not have heard of. And one of them was the first Sugar Cubes album. And I went out and got it. And it's fantastic.
But you hadn't heard it.
I'd never heard it. No, I just bought it.
This is something, kids, it was called a newspaper where you couldn't click through to hear the song.
Exactly.
I
got it, Song Unheard, Album Unheard. I went out and bought that. And I also bought another of the recommendations, which was not by any means the Mekons' first record. The Mekons were an obscure band from Leeds that had come up around the time of Gang of Four. Sadly, we don't have time to hear any Gang of Four songs because, ooh, talk about a guitar that cleans the head out.
Horseradish guitar.
Oh, love it, love it, love it, love it. But they had kind of – I think they had finally gotten a kind of big label. I mean, one of the big labels for this record called the Mekons Rock and Roll, and the second song on it is called Club Mekon.
And we mentioned the Mekons in Act One, and just like Chekhov's gun, you don't mention the Mekons in Act One without having it go off in Act Three. Club Mekon.
Ah, the Mekons, yes. And just because my fandom deepened through the 90s as they continued against all expectations to put out really terrific record after terrific record. They're not very good at their instruments. They are heavy drinkers.
Okay, not good at their instruments, heavy drinkers. Can I bring up the Replacements to you?
I've tried so many times to like
really?
The Replacements.
Not a Mats fan, but Midwest, can't, I mean, the whole thing.
Can't do it.
Wow.
Can't get
interesting.
There.
Interesting.
Anyway, after the Corrections was published, people would say, and like, do you have a favorite band? And the Mekons provided a convenient answer to
and
that.
And then people going writing it down. And
the Mekons. You know, it turns out.
You like, haven't done album notes and stuff like that?
No. Think. People ask. I've.
You did this stupid radio show. I mean,
it's K-Squid.
Okay,
of
I
course.
Understand. Duty calls, but still.
No, I did a panel at Columbia about the Mekons, and on the panel were various luminaries, including Grail Marcus.
It's funny. I was just going to go for Grail Marcus. He's one of my favorite writers,
and. Grail Marcus, big Mekons fan, and afterwards he said, "You know, if you like the Mekons, you should hear Wussy." So I became kind of a major Wussy fan, and it was so Wussy was, and I'm bad with people's names. Anyway, the guy he was formerly of the Ass Ponies, and it's kind of Southern rock again, very basic. It sounds like it was made in the basement. Really, really good lyrics and catchy enough. Anyway, and via Wussy, I found my way to the Paranoid Style.
Ah.
And I think we should cue that up next because we are running low on time. And
Elizabeth Nelson, who was. Grail Marcus is in my uber pantheon of rock critics, but Elizabeth Nelson, for her tweets, she does 240 characters, even though she doesn't have to, tweets about albums, and they're perfect distillations. Just a fantastic writer, and is also a performer. So
they did this record, Wussy and Paranoid Style did this record together, and this, I think, I don't even know who this is credited to. I think it's credited to Paranoid Style. But it's a song about our current political moment.
Ah, yes. Say no more, say no more.
Cadavers, oh!
follow. You followed the dead, I followed the mummies. You followed the leader, I followed the money. Oh! In a country of insurgents, you can win the West with your fraudulent intent. Oh! Lecture me about what's wrong with a paranoid style. We've been saying this all along. Oh! Raged upon and raffled off, shop worn and in tatters. We're absolutely baffled now. We're absolute cadavers.
Absolute Cadavers, Elizabeth Nelson, a.k.a. Paranoid Style, and Wussy, is teed up by the great Jonathan Franzen on this unique edition. The first, it's the Clatter of Platters, 45-year-on edition on KSQD. I've just been informed we're $1,131 away from our total of $30,000. So if you like what you're seeing, we either need 1,000 people to pledge $1.15 or some well-heeled Silicon Valley person who just loves this show and wants to plunk the money down by calling 831-900-5773, or any call or donation is well appreciated. But we've got 10 minutes left, and we didn't even scratch the surface of the music we've got. But what's
No, we had 26 songs on the list, and I think we've done about 15.
Yes,
so
we've been blabbing on. I've been blathering on so long. I apologize, listeners.
So let's I had to make a – it breaks my heart to leave any of these songs off.
I know. We have Carole King in here, folks.
We have Carole King.
Neil Young, Velvet Underground. Well, you have to have Velvet Underground.
Yes.
Linda Ronstadt was in here.
Sleater-Kinney. We're missing Liz Phair. We're missing Silver Jews. We're missing Helena DeLand. Really good people. But we're going to go to a weird singer with a weird
singer. Okay, this will be unusual coming from you. But
very, very distinctive voice and lyrically the best.
But you better tell me.
Oh, her name is Jolie Holland.
Ah, Jolie Holland. Yes.
And this is thematic, but it's kind of like the opposite.
But this is almost a little mellow, though, compared to what we've been playing.
Well, we're winding down.
Okay, I understand.
We're trying to give a little structure to this.
It's just like playing Green Sleeves at a concert. You know, the house lights are up. We're playing the music to get you out the
door. It's not that mellow.
Okay. Decide for yourself, dear listeners.
I'm premeditating and crime of a personal kind. I'm about to go out of my mind. I'm just about sick to death of taking breath and walking this line of mine. Now folks that know what's good for them are good at ignoring them, but I just can't put these thoughts down. I'm harrowed and abused and broken and pursued by this notion that follows me around. My heart is hurting, my spirit's burdened. I feel like a liar and a thief for taking air, for being here unwanted. I look for my final release.
songs. I know I'm wrong. Fare thee well, and I'll be going. When I'm dead and gone, my immortal home will hold me in its bosom safe and cold. No more desires will light their fires or disturb my immaculate calm. And the birds of the air and the beasts of the soil and the fishes of the desperate sea will know who I am, and our substance will expand as part of everything. As part of everything, my God. As part of everything. And the clouds will roll, and the wind will blow, and the beautiful birds will. Goodbye, goodbye, California. Goodbye to your waving trees, to your succulent wind and all my friends. Fairly well, goodbye. So be it.
You were right, not mellow.
No, she does. It doesn't even take that much. You're writing a song. You can use the obvious and expected word, or you can think for 30 seconds and use a different and more interesting word, which she does.
You should consider a career writing, Jonathan.
I am no kind of songwriter. Yeah. I do recognize good lyric writing when I hear it.
Well, that's why I love the country genre, just the song titles. You know, I always say someone's come up with, you know, Tonight the Bottle Let Me Down. Done. You know, Take the Rest of the Night Off, Merle. You're there.
Yeah.
You know. Well, this has been fantastic. This has been 2 hours of musical mayhem, Clatters of Platters with Jonathan Franzen. Once again, a coveted winner of the coveted Best Local Writer. Robert Heinlein died, I think, 60 years ago, so he might have given you a run for your money, but congratulations. And thank you so, so much on behalf of everyone at this radio station for classing the joint up here.
It's a pleasure. I'm just sitting in this little swivel chair, actually looking forward to standing up and stretching my legs. I could have done that between songs, but we were chatting between songs.
And we play those two-minute punk songs, too, which didn't give us much time to make it out and back, so there's that.
There you go. No, it's been a pleasure. And
can I put you on the spot? Could we do another Clatter of Platters at some point in the not-too-distant future?
Of course, yes. I'm on the spot, I do like to support local media and particularly local radio. It's important, and it's treasured by those who listen.
Well, thank you, and remember that phone number, folks. 831, we know that, local area code, 900-5773. If you like what you've just heard, and you like what you hear consistently on this fine, fine radio station, and that would be KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQT Prunedale, he said, fulfilling that mandatory FCC requirement. And we're going to go out with the woof. You want to set this up? We have time for one more song, and this is a good one.
Oh, we are getting to the deepest origins of all we've been hearing last. Again, lyrically couldn't be better. And it sounds like it was played by some people on instruments in the next room. And it's sublime. It's called The Killing Floor.
Jonathan Franzen, thank you.
I should have quit you a long time ago. I should have quit you, babe, long time ago. I should have quit you and went on to Mexico. If I had a follow, my voice might. If I had a follow, my voice might. I'd have been gone. It's my second time. I should have been gone.